Okay, we'll get started. It's 1 o'clock. Hopefully your lunch is digesting somewhat better than it tastes. So I'm going to be talking about cross-forest migrations, a fun, adventurous topic. No sexy demos, I'm sorry. I'll show you some stuff you've seen before in the GUIs, but I'll show you how things look before and after. If you want sexy, that's kind of where the third-party tools come in, maybe. So I'll start off, who has done a cross-forest migration before? All right, who's in the middle of doing a cross-forest migration right now? Okay, so a lot of y'all felt the pain. Of those who have done a cross-forest migration, who's used third-party tools? Who did it on their own? Oh, about half and half, or both. So for those who have done it on their own, the roll your own migration tools or procedure does work. We'll be going over that today. I won't be touching on any third-party tools specifically. I'm mainly going to be going over how you can do it without third-party tools, where the pain and weaknesses are. I've been doing this 15 years, hence the lack of hair. So it's not a fun process, but it can be done. So let's go on. There we go. So my blog's right there. It redirects to elsewhere, my Twitter feed, etc. Is it working? It worked a minute ago. There we go. So this is a semi-interactive session. There are mics there. If you have questions, feel free to come up to a mic and interrupt me. I plan on doing some Q&A as this goes on. It will take a couple breaks for Q&A. I'm also going to touch on doing domain migrations, which is not necessarily part of a cross-forest exchange migration, but normally if you move your mailboxes from forest A to forest B, you probably want to bring your users and workstations and servers over too. So I'm going to touch over that depending on how many questions we get, how much time we have to cover that briefly. Okay, so the first thing to talk about is why would you want to do a cross-forest migration? The most common one is Company A has acquired Company B. I've been doing these, like I said, on and off for 15 years. That's the most common scenario. Bullet point number two is tied into that. A lot of times they'll be brought in where Company A is really companies A through E, and they have these different environments that they've collected over the years. They're kind of working together, but they want to simplify. And a lot of times they'll want to go to a resource forest to consolidate their exchange resources into that resource forest and maybe consolidate some of their account forests into one or fewer account forests. The other one is divestiture of a company. So Company A is selling off a division, and it's making it Company B. I've done those a lot. The most recent, most horrible one I did was without any tools because they had a one-month time frame. I got dropped into the project after the other expert left. I know why he left. And their decision was to, let's just clone all the VMs, have everything boot from SAN, and we'll bring it up in a new environment, and that'll work, right? 26-hour days. There's one 26-hour day, one 22-hour day. It was not fun, a lot of issues. They didn't have time to test. And the correct way to do it is with these procedures I'm going over, or third-party tools. Fresh start, that comes up occasionally, fairly rare. Most companies have a good environment already. They've cleaned it up over the years. I mean, 2000's been around for 14 years now, so they either have a lot of junk in their directory they've cleaned out, or have just decided it's good enough, we'll not worry about it anymore. Company name change comes up occasionally. Unfortunately, you cannot rename an exchange forest anymore. You used to be able to do it in 2003, although it was never recommended by anybody to do that because it may break Exchange, it may break dozens of other applications. You can change your SMTP domain name pretty easily, but if you have NDR messages or there's other places in Exchange where you will see the old company name, and sometimes there's some executive that says, we never want to see the old company name again, and they want to go through the domain rename process, which becomes a cross-forest migration. And the last one is the resource forest. There are probably a few other scenarios, but those are the five that, or six that I could come up with. I forgot I have a clicker. Aha, there we go. So out of the box, talking Exchange 2007 and higher to 2013 primarily for this session, you can migrate mailboxes. If all you want to do is get your mailboxes from forest A to forest B, you can use the built-in tools, and you're good to go. It's not that complex. Microsoft includes some scripts to make it easy. The built-in tools support cross-forest migrations. But if you have public folders, you're hurting, especially if you want to go to 2013 as your target, because there used to be a tool called iNetOrg or InternetOrg replication tool that would replicate public folders across forests. That does not work with 2013 as a target anymore. So your challenge there is if you have a lot of public folders, I'm a touch on that. But if you have a lot of public folders, that's really a value add for third parties. Groups, contacts, OUs, address lists, and all those other exchange objects that aren't mailboxes, none of those come over. So I'll be going over those. Some other mailbox attributes don't come over. Connectors, policies, email address policies, retention limits, retention tags. That's all stuff you have to either export to a file, bring over, or manually recreate. And then if you want, I said sexy tools, management, a nice GUI where you can group users together, have tracking, reporting, all that. That's also something you have to create yourself in PowerShell or whatever your chosen scripting tool method is, or third-party tool. And if you're coming from 2003, if you're coming from Exchange 2003, there is no crossfire, there is no migration support to Exchange 2013. Now, if you go into 365, public folders can be migrated eventually if you have under 10,000 today. If you're going from Exchange 2003, you can also go to Office 365 without any third-party tools right to from Exchange 2003. So starting out, you'll have a mailbox in Forest A, or what I'm calling just the source forest. So your mailbox is this in the source forest. You need to get them over to the target forest. So out of the box, you have prepare move requests. This is a PowerShell script. This script does several different things. The key thing it does is when you're ready to move John from Forest A to Forest B, you run this script in Forest B, the target forest. It'll create a mail-enabled user for John in Forest B that has an external address pointing back to John in Forest A. So it populates a mail object in Forest B. He'll now show up in the GAL. When you're ready to move his mailbox, this is a commandlet. This will turn that contact object or mail-enabled user into a mailbox-enabled user and start streaming the mailbox data from the source forest to the target forest. When it gets done, it'll turn John's mailbox in the source forest back to a mail-enabled user, which will have an external email address pointing to John's mailbox in Forest B. These PowerPoints, by the way, are available to download from the IMX site, and it is being recorded, I believe. So 24 to 48 hours, it'll all be online. You could also follow along with Yammer if you wanted to. Nobody brought alcohol to make this a drinking game, did they? Okay, so I won't say Yammer again. So that's just for your mailboxes. Now we're going to talk about all the other stuff. So many more steps required. And actually, some of these steps are also required for mailboxes. You can't migrate mailboxes just out of the blue. You have to do some prerequisite work. You have to set up routing. And I'll be going over that in this session here. So we need to pair to the Active Directory. We need to get DNS for name resolution working. There are several steps we need to carry out in the source environment, the target environment, mainly to send connectors, possibly recipient policies. We need to prepare the mailboxes for migration. I always like to dump a lot of the attributes from mailboxes to a file, mainly their SMTP addresses and their X.500 addresses. Does anybody here not know what X.500 address is for? Okay. Well, yeah, Legacy Exchange DN, but it's still used as a unique identifier for objects in Exchange. So if you don't bring that over and do a cross-forest migrations, people get NDRs when they try to reply to old messages or old calendar invites, etc. So I like to export those properties just in case something goes wrong. I like to have a file I can fall back to find those X.500 addresses. Then we need to get the non-mailbox data, contacts, groups, over. Now with Exchange 2007 and higher, we can do cross-forest availability. Before, you had Internet Org tool, which you could sync your free busy information. This takes the place of that. So that does work 2007 to 2013. and the steps go on. So the step 9, that's done by the prepare move request. That's where I said it'll create that mail-enabled user. Once you have a few test mailboxes over there and test accounts, you want to test things thoroughly. I'll be harping on testing several times throughout this demo. It's hard to test too much. You want to test that the mailboxes and the target environment can send mail back and forth. In the source environment, they can send mail back and forth. They can send externally. It comes from the correct IP externally. That IP does have a reverse DNS record. That mail flow is not going to get rejected on the internet because you're missing a reverse DNS record, or you're getting flagged as a spammer because you're coming from a dynamic IP range. So there's several things that testing is very important before you actually start doing any production migrations. Public folders, there is not a migration method, so the only method I can recommend for free is copy them, i.e. PSTs, dumping permissions to file, massaging those permissions, importing permissions, a tedious process. And there's no synchronization. So if you have public folders that are changing by being used by multiple teams, you have a logistics issue, which I'll be touching on. And then finalizing the message environment, once you get everything over, you can remove all these connectors and clean things up. Yeah, so let's actually get into the details. So first we need to make sure Active Directory, the two different directories can talk to each other. There is name resolution. It's not necessarily required that you set up a two-way trust, but if you are going to be migrating accounts, workstations, servers later on, you're going to need that two-way trust. ADMT, that's Active Directory Migration Tool. That is the domain migration tool for your accounts, workstation, servers. I'll be touching on that later on, depending on how time is. You need to disable SID filtering. This automatically filters out the SID of objects coming in from other forests. You want to bring that stuff over, normally, when you're doing a cross-forest migration. On DNS, you need to make sure name resolution is working. I tend to set up secondary zones in the target forest just in case there's any hiccups. We still have a copy of that DNS record. You could have a stub. You could have conditional forwarders. There's several ways to do the DNS. I prefer to do secondary zones. And the last one talks about the spam filtering. When you send an email out to the internet, it needs to come from a known IP address. That known IP address has to have a reverse DNS record. So the receiver, when they get that mail, most of them do a reverse DNS lookup to say, the domain you sent as, is that really the domain you came from based on your IP address? So that's one that I've worked with companies where they try to do this on their own. It's like, our mail's getting rejected as spam, or it's sitting in outbound queue, or people aren't getting it. And it's because they forgot that little thing there. Because somebody set this up maybe 10 years ago, their IP addresses haven't changed, so that person who set it up 10 years ago is now long gone. So in the source forest, we need to set up a unique domain. I tend to do something like source.company.com. So this will be how mail is routed back and forth, and the target will do something like target.company.com. I mentioned earlier, John has a mailbox in forest A. In forest B, once we run that prepare move request, he'll now have a mail-enabled user in that forest. That mail-enabled user will have an address of source or john.at source.company.com. In the target environment, he'll have target john@target.company.com, and the source he'll have source.company.com. This user route messages back and forth. It's not necessarily required for moving the data over, but it is going to be required for cross-forest availability. So in forest B, it knows how to refine John's object, in forest A to look up his availability information in forest A. And I'll touch on cross-forest availability briefly. That's another whole topic to talk about. So to add that source@company.com, the easy way to do that is you just add that to the email address policy. But unfortunately, a lot of companies or individuals within a company may have that little checkbox unchecked that says automatically apply policies to it. So you can do that with PowerShell. I use a VB script I've been using for years because I still do a lot of 2003 migrations. You can make PowerShell work there, but it's easier to use a VB script. That's what I've been using, and it works fine for adding this address where it finds objects that don't have apply email address policy flag set on them and they'll apply that source at company.com to them. So we have this unique namespace. We now need to create a send connector, so when I go to send email to target.company.com, it doesn't try to go out through the firewall or through the internet. So we want to set a send connector so the source of, say, 2010 environment, which is what I'll be demoing here, can send directly to the 2013 servers and vice versa. And we need to set up as an internet relay for the public or the primary domain. So the primary domain is company.com. When email comes in at company.com, traditionally, in this case, the 2010 environment would consume that email. If it can't find that recipient, it would generate the NDR message. When we have a cross-fire scenario, we now have two different messaging environments. So if 2010 doesn't know who it is, or source environment doesn't know who it is, we need to tell Exchange, said, we'll send it over the pond, or send it over to the target environment, and see if it can resolve it. So we need to remove that to make it non-authoritative, set as an internet relay. So that message comes in for John once his mailbox is moved. It will then say, I can't find John here, and will forward it over to the 2013 environment or the target environment. So similar steps in the target environment. We're going to set up that unique namespace, target.company.com. We're going to create email address policies. Since this is a nice, fresh environment, everybody should, or all the objects should, have that flag set on to automatically apply that target.company.com address to the objects as they get created. We're going to create a send connector to point back to the source environment, so mail can flow as users are moved over to the new environment, back to the source environment. Relays is another one that needs to be manually set up. Most companies, I'm sure everybody in this room has some type of printer, fax machine, application or something that's doing some type of anonymous, hopefully authenticated relay, but most organizations have dumb sending machines that don't support authentication. They just try to send it to a IP address or hopefully a DNS name. So we need to set up those relay connectors, anonymous or authenticated relay connectors. And then for AutoDiscover, we can export the AutoDiscover information. So AutoDiscover works in both the forest. So let's actually look at how this looks in the product. So let me switch over. Well, not product, but products.
When you say export AutoDiscover, you're talking about the SCP that you put in the new forest, right?
Right. And actually what it has is a referral in the source forest to the target forest. So this is Exchange 2010. Who here is running Exchange 2010? 2013? 2007? 2003? 5.5? I was talking to one of my peers yesterday. He's actually working at 5.5 migration right now. I haven't done one in about 2 or 3 years. They're still out there. Very rare, but it's still out there. Okay, so I'm going to go over the mail flow piece here. So in a source environment, we need to add the accepted domain, so as mail comes in to source, in my case, lab.izzy.org, the Exchange 2010 environment will accept that. To automatically add the email address, I've modified the default email address policy. If most companies have many, so you need to add it to all of them, and added that, the source one down there, so it's going to stamp alias at source.lab, or source.lab.izzy.org to the objects. And then finally, send connector, there it is. So on the send connector, I have two address spaces. I have the official company domain, lab.izzy.org, and then I have the target one. So again, any mail that comes in, if it can't resolve it locally, we want it to go out to the target environment. So that's the first connector, or not connector, but address space. And the second one's for that unique domain so it can route both across both environments. Oops. And let's go to, there we go. Wrong browser. Okay, so this is 2013. So again, in my demo here, my source environment is Exchange 2010, target environment is Exchange 2013. So on accepted domains, I have the target.lab.izzy.org. I've modified the email address policy to add the target to it. So very similar configuration on both sides. And then I have a send connector. And the smart host is pointing to my Exchange 2010 or E14 or Mail14 server. So it's routing messages directly to the Exchange servers. Another little gotcha is authentication. So when we're sending the SMPP traffic both ways, it is authenticating against a count in each forest. Switch back over. Okay, so now we have the routing configured. We need to export some of the data. So I'm going to demo this in a minute. So I said earlier, I like to export mailbox information to a file as a backup. The main thing I'm worried about losing is X.500 address. So once those are gone, it's really hard to recover what that user's or mailbox's X.500 address is. And if you don't recover that, people reply to old messages. They get a really pretty NDR message that looks like complete gobbledygook. And the cannot find its recipient, and then it has an X.500 address with a bunch of percent symbols and other things in it. Other things that aren't brought over, the 402 delegates, delivery restrictions, mailbox limits. There's a lot of other settings on it, mailbox, that aren't brought over. So I also have PowerShell and VBScripts to dump this information to a file. For smaller environments, it's possible to do this manually. For larger environments, you're going to want to script the importing of the information. For very large environments, you probably want to go to third-party tools because it takes a lot of time and energy to get this information in there and done correctly, and you want to try to prevent fat fingering or user error whenever possible. Groups also don't come over. They will, if the group exists, you'll see in the demo later on that when we run that prepare move request, if it finds a group the user's a member of, it'll put them in that group automatically. But that group must exist. So I'm going to go over importing those groups. If you're using ADMT to do your account migration later on, that'll also bring over groups. But normally when I work with customers to do cross-forest migrations, I tell them let's focus on Exchange first because that's actually easier than the accounts and workstations and servers and applications. The applications are the killer for doing cross-forest migrations. Every cross-forest migration project I've worked, there's been some application that has hard-coded information in it, hard-coded a domain controller, hard-coded a domain name, and the developer's no longer there, so nobody has that code. Or it's a third-party app where that company's gone. They bought that 5 years ago, and a company went belly up 2 years ago. So for doing cross-forest migrations, I always try to separate. Let's do the email first because that's predictable and fairly easy, and then come back later. Let's do the accounts, workstations, then file and print servers, and then application servers, hoping the application servers do support some type of cross-forest trusted authentication. So the groups I'm going to bring over, I export this other data individually. I have a couple different scripts. I could spend a week or two and combine all my scripts in one massive script, but then it makes troubleshooting and logging a lot harder. So I like to have manageable size scripts. If you want to bring over your OU structure, that's also not brought over. With the import method I'm using here, I'm using LDIF. LDIF keeps the path of the object. So the OU structure is fairly important. They stay the same unless you want to manually edit the import-export files. So I'm going to go over this. Cancel. Oops, wrong button. Four. There we go. Okay. So this is my source environment. Show you a little bit more. Not in a big company. I created some groups, Bronco fans, Longhorn fans. Put the coaches of both those teams up there. A couple test users. So not a big cool environment, but good enough for this demo here. So we need to export this data, and especially the non-mailbox data, to bring it over into the environment. So I have a collection of processes. So my demos, again, aren't going to be that sexy. So I'm using LDIF. I'm excluding a bunch of attributes. There's several attributes we don't want to bring over because it will confuse the target Exchange environment. So I'm excluding those. And I'm brewing actually, both say contacts here. One was supposed to be groups, but I'm gonna cheat and just do up arrow. There we go. So if we run this, it'll generate a file. Nope, notepad. Okay. So this is the export of the context we want to bring over. The top line is a path of the object. Now all my users for this demo are sitting in the users container. If you have many OUs, which I'm sure you all have many OUs, we also need to export the OU paths or the OUs to a file. And that's another LDIF command. We dump them to a file, import the OUs, then we can import the users and groups because they keep the path the same, unless you want to manually edit this file and change those paths. So I have a couple of contacts, Charlie Strong, and the other ones down there is John Fox. Same thing for groups. Yeah. All right, notepad. There it is. So groups, it looks the same. This is just the raw AD attributes from this group here, or groups. So I'm dumping those just to a file. And then I also have some VB scripts, export contact addresses. Oops, I forgot to run that in C script because you don't want pop-ups on the screen. I like to log stuff, but I don't want to be prompted every time it does something. So let's run that again with C script. There we go. So I log out to the screen what I just exported. This is actually the object's addresses, notepad, and contact. I dump it to a CSV file. This script just goes out, enumerates SMTP addresses. I ignore the MS mail, CC mail. Hopefully you don't have any of that around anymore. If you've upgraded your environment, you probably still have those addresses sitting in objects, so this will at least clean that up for you. But the main one I bring in here is the X.500 address of the object, because that's the unique identifier for this mailbox. So we want to make sure I have a backup of that address just in case something goes wrong. And I'll also export group membership too. Notepad. Pretty simple CSV file here. We have the name of the object, the same account name, the other name, and the email address for it. So I have all that information kind of just backed up. So I've exported the OUs, contacts and groups and some of the additional attributes to files on the 2010 environment. You simply need to copy those over to the 2013 environment. So the order you need to do this in, as I harped on a couple times, you need to bring those OUs over unless you want to change your paths in those files, import the information. So I'm just going to go right into the next demo here. Oops. And switch over. There we go. So importing using the LDIF command, the path is different because our domain names are different. It does support automatically changing the domain name as we import the data into the environment. So I already have the files copied over here. Let's just do a. So since I already done this earlier, we have zero items modified. But if things are changing, let's say your contacts are changing, you can actually export it again, bring it over, and it'll update those objects or modify those objects if their attributes change. Just to kind of go over, this is like one I have to import the addresses of the objects. So this is actually a PowerShell script. It took that input file, it finds the contacts, it imports our SMTP addresses, adds the X.500 address to the object. So I'm not going to go through the PowerShell script in general, but this is just for contacts. We're importing the contact information. So I have a bunch of ifs, I have some tries and catches because things change, things are unexpected. Somebody may have already created an object with the same SMTP address. So there's several things you need to handle. So it's fairly complex to get this information over. What sounds simple as importing addresses becomes fairly complex, especially when dealing with larger environments. And you want to have logging in your scripts. You want to have error handling in your scripts. So especially if you're doing it for hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of users, you need a log to refer to when things come up and go wrong. So the same thing on the other side. We can just do the LDIF import onto groups. Actually, that's not one I want to open up. I have another one for groups. This one imports the members of the group. So we exported the groups, exported the member information. On the target side, we now need to import the groups, create the groups. Then we need to populate the membership of the groups, add the X.500 addresses to them, the SMTP addresses to them. And I said logging is important, so in all my migration scripts, I have logging inside of them. So if you look at the target environment here, so in target environment, there's a test user three in the source environment I haven't done anything with. So far, I went ahead and did a prepare move request and migrated test user one, so that's actually a mailbox. This is a mail-enabled user, so I've done a prepare move request on them. So in the live demo here in a minute, we'll actually get test user three brought over. There we go. So once you've actually imported the objects, it just brought them over as they are from the source environment using the LDIF information. If you have non-universal groups in your source domain, which aren't supported on Exchange 2010, 2013, we need to convert these to universal groups. There is a one-line commandlet you can do to find all those universal groups and change them to find all the non-universal groups and change them to universal groups. So there's a one-line command I have in the notes of my slide deck. So if you download my slide deck, you'll see there's actually a lot more in than what you're seeing on these slides. Then we need to fix the alias of objects or look for objects with incorrect aliases. Previous versions of Exchange weren't as touchy on the aliases, mainly 2003 and earlier. So if you have a space in your alias or you have a special character in your alias, you can't manage it. You can't migrate it. You can't open it up in the console. You can't really do anything. And in some cases, the only way to edit that object is to go to /etc/edit and hack the object or fix up that alias. Then you can start managing in Exchange 2007 and higher. Microsoft does release or does have a script called Fix Alias, which handles several of those scenarios, mainly the special characters, but it doesn't handle spaces and a couple other ones, oddly enough. So I tend to dump those out to a CSV file, bring it into Excel, and search for some other scenarios. So when you're doing cross-virus migration, there is a lot of manual data editing you may have to do. Number three, updates objects. So pretty much I have to get recipient, pipe that to update recipient, that updates them to Exchange 2013 level. The send and receive connectors, most organizations have several send and receive connectors. It's not normally dozens or hundreds, it's maybe a handful. So those I've always done manually. The exception would be in receive connectors, the IP restrictions you may have on like anonymous relay. Hopefully, if you have an anonymous relay, you have it locked down by IP addresses. I've worked for companies where they had over 2,000 IP addresses in one of the receive connectors. So that is where you want to dump that to a file. Since it's all Exchange 2007 and higher now, since we're not supporting 2003, the format's basically the same. You can dump that to a file. You can then bring that into your target environment, your 2013 environment, import those IP addresses. Address lists. Address book policies, those are normally very few, so I don't have that scripted out. I just manually recreate those. Email address policies, retention tags, etc. You don't normally have hundreds of those objects. You may have a dozen, so that's something I just do manually. It's quicker to do it manually than to write a script. My general policy, if I have to do it more than 10 to 20 times, I'll try to script it out. If it's less than that, I just do it manually. Of course, it all depends on how long one of those times takes, too. Query-based distribution groups. I see those occasionally, but again, those are something there's not normally a lot of. You can just create that. You could copy and paste a query from your source environment to your target environment. So that's not something I've semi-automated with scripts yet. Okay, so this is back to the native tools of Microsoft. So to create the target object, which initially would be a mail-enabled user, we just need to prepare a move request. This is included with the Exchange 2007 and higher. It's in the EX scripts directory. If you haven't seen this before, it's a fairly complex script. I have scripts that I do a lot of other things and logging and stuff that call this script, let it do the actual work, and then it returns back to my script. And I do things like modifying the UPNs and doing a few other fix-up things after the mailboxes are migrated. Also want to dump it out. If you have a lot of accounts or mailboxes you need to migrate, I create a list of those in a CSV file again. And then I have another script I use that processes that CSV file with hundreds or thousands of accounts and really just calls, prepare a move request and brings those over. And that's where we do the update recipients command. In general, I'll do a couple of prepare a move requests on test accounts, make sure things are working in the target environment, and then I'll dump all the accounts out to a file, run the prepare a move request against all the mailboxes, so now the target environment has an object in the global address list for all the mailboxes in the source environment. That way, when you start bringing users over, they have a fully populated GAL of users, groups, and contacts if we import and export those over. So when John comes over, he goes to the GAL, he sees everybody he's used to see. Now, he may not notice the icon's a little different on those because some will be mail-enabled users that will show up as the contact icon, and others, as their mailboxes are migrated over, will be actual mailbox and have a little different icon. So once I've tested things, we'll set up CrossForest auto-discover. email address policies, you know, set up availability. There is a whole, there's several blog posts out there on this. I have, in the notes, I have links to the URLs to those. So I'm not going to go over that. The key thing with CrossForest migrations is testing. Testing mail flow, testing replying to old messages, testing updating existing meetings, testing sending email externally, receiving externally from both the source environment to make sure everything's flowing correctly, coming from the right places, is Outlook updating. Now, since we're talking 2007 and higher, your client, and we're going to 2013, your clients have to be Outlook 2007. So in theory, as you move a mailbox from Forest A to Forest B, Outlook via AutoDiscover will pick up that the mailbox has moved and it'll automatically update the profile, assuming AutoDiscover is working correctly. And Outlook's working correctly. About 5 to 10% of the time, profiles don't update. So when I do CrossForest migrations, or really any migration, I make sure there's an IT team standing by at the physical location or the department that we're migrating that day or the night before. So when those users come in, they sit down, they log in, hopefully they get the prompt that your administrator's made a change, you need to restart Outlook, and they close Outlook and reopen, and it works fine. Sometimes that doesn't work. And with Exchange 2013, you can't just put the server name in there anymore and fix the profile. So you really just need to delete the profile and then let AutoDiscover recreate that profile. It's fairly common, like I said, around 5% or so, where Outlook just doesn't update its profile. It could be because it's on an older service pack or it doesn't have a specific KB or a hotfix installed. So having a standardized Outlook deployment on the latest and greatest is ideal, but I've yet to work for any company that has standardized Outlook deployment all on the same version level. Then testing availability. We move John over. Can John still see Jane's calendar, or can he see Jane's availability information, not calendar, but availability information? Some things don't work at all CrossForest. Like if Jane is John's assistant, Jane can't open up John's mailbox once he goes to the other forest and vice versa. So when you're doing the mailbox migrations, you need to group users together based on how they work. So maybe a whole sales team comes over together. And if they have their own public folders, export their sales public folders to PSTs or whatever, bring them over, import them, reset permissions. I'll touch on that a little bit more. But the key thing is test, retest, and test again. If you don't have a lab and you plan on doing a CrossForest migration on your own, you need to set up a lab. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. It's just not something you want to do in production for the first time. Even if you hire a consultant to do it for you or to work with you on that, you still should have a lab. So let's go over some mailboxes. Switch over. Okay, so this is my Exchange 2013 command prompt here. As we saw a moment ago, we have several users here. Test user 3 is not currently in the organization. So we're going to use the prepare move request to create a mail-enabled user for test user 3. So I have a little script that does a few more things inside prepare move request does. So in theory, we just hit that. Behind the scenes, it went ahead and created a mail-enabled user. It copied the X.500 address for that user from the source environment, 2010, to this new environment. It did find that test user 3 was a member of the Longhorn fans group, and it did find that group, so it put him inside that group. I'll open up this script so you can see what it did. Prep single. So all this script isn't doing anything too fancy, really. The main thing it's doing is prompting me for credentials. I've already run it once, so the first time you run it, it prompts you for credentials. It saves it to a global variable, so if I close the script and rerun the script, it doesn't prompt me for credentials again. If you type your credentials in wrong, you do have to set them to null and then redo it. Then it checks if the user already exists. If the user already exists, it does a different switch on it. It actually just sets a couple properties on it. Otherwise, it just calls the prepare move request. Let me scroll over here. Oops. A long command line. There it is. So the prepare move request, I said earlier, it's in the EX scripts directory. So I'm just using the environment variable EX scripts, calling the prepare move request. The identity's been passed to it. I did it from the command line a minute ago. So I did TU1, or TU3. That's the user's same account name. Then I'm specifying the domain controller. There we go. Specifying the domain controller. You don't necessarily have to specify domain controllers in a lot of the commandlets we're doing cross-virus migrations, but due to AD latency, I always specify the domain controller, so I'm always pointing all my scripts and commandlets at the same DC, so don't worry about any type of AD latency. Since we're not bringing over the OU information for the location, you have to specify a generic OU to dump them into. So I used to use a migrated objects OU. After the fact, you're going to want to clean these objects up, move them into their appropriate OUs. We've exported the OU information. I have another script that exports the user's location and can move these objects around. I just have that as a separate script. Again, keeping things separated make the scripts a little easier to troubleshoot and manage. We're telling it, this prepare move request again still, that we're linking it to a user. So we're actually linking the account in the target forest will be linked to, the mailbox in the target forest will be linked to the account in the source forest. There we go. Now if we run this command again, I'll also run it for the same user, it'll run again. It'll find a user, says found existing user, and updates it. Again, it appends information even though it's already on there. It doesn't actually do anything. If I go back to EAC and do a refresh, and go to all users, there we go. So there's test user 3. If I open up test user 3, and so now we now have test user 3. It wasn't there a minute ago. Let's go to, I did forget to show one thing. I meant to show you what it looked like before I migrated. I just won't hit refresh. So test user 3 right here, we see it's a user mailbox. Test user 2 is still a user mailbox. I did migrate that one earlier, so if I hit refresh. I thought I did, maybe not. I did temp user. So now we have test user 1, they've already been migrated, so they are a mail user. Test user 2 and 3, they still have their mailbox in the source environment. So the next, and on the target environment, we saw that there, if we go to ADUNC, let's do a refresh here. So there's test user 3. You'll notice all these accounts are disabled. When you're doing a cross-forest migration, it'll create them, the object in the target domain. It'll be disabled effectively without a password. And this is what I call a dummy account, resource account, et cetera. That's linked to the mailbox that will be created for this user. When we migrate the mailbox over, the account will stay disabled. It'll be linked back to the object in the source environment. So when the users go to log on to 2013, they'll actually log on with their domain, their account in the source domain. So let's actually do that real quick. So I'm going to log in here as lab14 TU3, which we just did. There we go. So this is test user 3. They're currently on Exchange 2010. I sent out some company spam. So everybody got the company spam, reply to that. Just said hello. And if we go over to 2014, and let's see here, go to OWA. So this is test user 1. So earlier, I replied to an existing email from test user 1, and test user 3 was on that. Test user 3, I hadn't done prepare a move request yet, so the object did not exist in the GAL on the 2013 environment. So here's a nice NDR message you get if you try to reply to an existing message for a user that has not been brought over or populated in the target environment. Go back. There we go. There we go. So to migrate the mailboxes, I'll do the next. You can do an Exchange Management Shell. You can also do it in the Exchange Console, or Exchange Administrator Console. So you can do it in a GUI if you want. I've actually always done it from command line. I do it in PowerShell. I have scripts with logging and error handling stuff, so I prefer to do it that way. That way it's all in the same set of logs, et cetera. So you want to migrate the mailboxes over, test it. You need to figure out how long things are going to take, so you need to look at statistics like how many gigabytes per hour I'm getting when moving mailboxes. Now, this is a wild varying number. It really depends on how many items are in the mailbox. You know, a mailbox could be 2 gigs and have 10,000 items. And another mailbox could be 2 gigs with 100,000 items. That 100,000 one's going to take a lot longer than a 10,000 item mailbox. So it's really a ballpark figure. When I'm trying to estimate how long it's going to take, I use 2 gig an hour on the low end, 4 gig an hour on the high end. I normally see somewhere in between. I've seen as low as a half gig an hour because the source environment was an old environment. The server's on its last leg. It's already at capacity. And these mailbox moves get really throttled down. So they slowly come over. But it's good when you're, especially you have a large number of mailboxes or large mailboxes, to know how long this is going to take to move that data over. Some things I haven't scripted out yet. For instance, setting up the delegates, alternative recipients, and restrictions. I do dump that to a file, but those normally aren't hundreds or thousands. It's normally dozens, maybe 100 max, that hopefully could be delegated to a junior admin somewhere to set that back up. If you have mobile devices, they don't support auto-discover, at least most of them don't. So when you move John from forest A to forest B, that mobile device is still pointing at the fully qualified domain name, say mail14.lab.izzy.org. It's not going to know to update to point to the target environment. So that is definitely one manual step you're having your clients. If you have Mac clients, POP, IMAP, other non-auto-discover compatible clients, you will need to manually update those clients once the mailbox they're pointing to is moved over to the other environment. Because if they try to log in and authenticate against a mailbox and it's not in the 2010 environment, it's just not going to work. Oh, got my slides there. Okay, demo. Switch back over here. So we're actually going to migrate the mailboxes now. Okay, so as we saw a minute ago, test user one already has a mailbox. Test user two and three are just mail-enabled objects. We want to bring them over. Let's do move single to U2. And I'll do to U3 at the same time. Then I have another script that runs. Oops, that's not the one I meant to run. They're named too similar. This is a script that goes through and refreshes every 5 seconds to get mailbox information. It has a random snapshot of how quickly the data is being moved. These mailboxes only have a handful of messages, so we'll never get anything above zero in this demo. But it refreshes, so test user two is already done migrating. Test user three is running, and it'll actually exit here after the next run. There we go. Then I can run my other script. Get move stats. Now we're not going to see any good stats here because, again, these mailboxes are small, but it tells me how many items we had, how many gigabytes per hour we had. It's mostly division by zero here, so it came up with zero. But if you have populated mailboxes, I have this script that at least give me a ballpark figure of how many gigabytes per hour I'm getting or how many items per hour I'm getting to move these items over. So I can then update management. Yes, we can move this many users every night if we have a 10-hour move window. Now with 2007 and higher, I will normally do the suspend when ready. So move all the data over, suspend it without updating the Active Directory. So we pre-populate the mailboxes in the target environment, so the bulk of the data is already there. And get move status. I have references to them in the slide deck too, in the notes. And my website where I keep my script is just a raw directory, izzy.org/scripts. There's an Exchange subfolder, there's a migration subfolder, there's about probably 30 scripts underneath each one of the subfolders. If you noticed, you probably didn't, let me open up one of the scripts. Yeah, that's not a good example here. I don't yet, it hasn't been a big enough need. Smaller clients, it's not a big of a need. Bigger clients, we normally lean towards third-party tools. So, in a lot of my scripts, I'll have where you can download it from, last time it's updated, I even have a little change log, and a to-do list of what I want to do in that script when I find time. Okay, so we just brought that mailbox over, or both the mailbox over, and switch this one here. Let's go to, so if I do a refresh here, and people. Users. So this is at test user three. This is actually now a mailbox. If I go into, let's go back to 2010. So we just migrated those objects. Right now they're showing user mailbox. I'm going to hit refresh. So they're now mail users. If I open these up and look at email address properties, you'll notice a couple things have changed. One, it put the X.500 address of the object in the target environment. And then two, it said this is now a mail contact, so it has to have external address. It set the external address to the target environment. So this test user two will still show up in the GAL in the source environment, even though it's not a mailbox anymore. If somebody does reply all that includes this user, it'll be using the X.500 address. It'll route to this object, but that mail then be forwarded out by the SMTP address. And on the same side, if I go to here and recipients, I meant it's open at four. Let's do a refresh here. So there's test user three. This is now a mailbox. You notice it is a linked mailbox, and it's linked to the account in Lab 14, which is my 2010 environment. So if I go back over here, wrong browser. So I'm logged in as test user three. If I don't tell the user anything and he hits refresh, this is what will happen. So you got to educate your users. If you move people's mailboxes when you're doing cross-forest migration, they need to know what to expect, whether that's a post-it note on their monitor, you send an email blast, you put a note on the coffee machine, a water cooler, whatever. Users need to know when they're being migrated and what to expect. So in this case, he was logged in just fine 2 minutes ago, hit refresh and gets nice little error here. And the user's not gonna have any idea what the heck this means. But what it really means is his mailbox hasn't moved. It no longer exists on the 2010 environment. So he now needs to log into the 2013 environment. So I'm gonna sign out real quick and log in as user. So he's actually in the Lab 14 environment, so I need to put in the domain name, or what I did behind the scenes, the default domain name is actually the source environment's domain name. Okay. So he's now been migrated over. He didn't have a mailbox a little bit ago. Now he's on 2013. If you look at his gal will be populated at least with the users that I've done prepare move requests for the groups and contacts that I've imported. So I'll go back. Oh, wrong deck. Okay, there we go. So again, test, and retest. I mentioned these a minute ago. There's several clients that don't support auto-discover. All those have to be manually updated. If people have a shortcut on their desktop to OWA, or you have kiosks with OWA, you have an issue, especially with kiosks, where you have people click on a kiosk to go to OWA, you now have to have two links in there. Are you on the legacy environment, or are you in a new environment? That's pretty much what the links have to say. And you have to educate your users, which is where they are. So as you move users over, you should have already tested Mailflow. That should all be working. There we go. So again, it's hard to test too much. You can't rush a cross-forest migration. Every migration I've done, there's been some surprises from, you know, weird attributes coming from other mail systems, or somehow things got jacked up in the directory. We had to jump in ATSI edit. Edit attributes, odd connectors, nobody's documented these connectors, many systems sending by anonymous relay, nobody knows who owns these systems anymore, but their IP addresses still have to be in the list. It's a good time to clean up those relays. I try to work with companies when we bring stuff over. Okay, here's a list of 100 IP addresses. Which one of these do I really need to send in here? Because any one of those at any point in time could start sending spam out and get your domain blacklisted, your IP addresses blacklisted. So it's important to really narrow down those SMTP relays, and if at all possible, get them moving to authenticated. Question?
The account is still in Lab 14?
No, in this case, I did a prepare move request on test user 2 and 3, which created a mail-enabled user in the target environment. Oh, the NT account is still, it's in both environments, but it's only enabled in the source environment.
So the active directory account is still on the old port?
Correct. That's where the valid account is. So that user gets to his desktop, he logs in. He's still logging into his legacy domain. When he opens up Outlook, it's authenticating against his legacy domain. When he goes to log into OWA, to 2013 OWA, he has to put his legacy domain in because his target account is still disabled because his mailbox is linked to his old account.
Normally, on your experience, when you're going to activate another account?
Sure, I'll actually touch on that in just a minute. But that is, I normally get everybody migrated over to the new environment, and then I start working on the account migration, because the problem with the account migration is legacy apps, or any apps, I should say, for that matter. And that's always a whole project. I work with customers a lot of times. They want to do it all as one big project. And I try to stress, let's do the mailbox migration as one project, the account or AD migration, workstation, server migration as a separate project, because there's a whole different cases, set of unknowns for the AD migration, mainly due to applications. So I showed you just a minute ago, but that's a nice error message you get if you don't update the users. So at this point, we've done some test migrations, a couple pilot migrations. We want to start doing more pilot migrations. That's a key one. Work with IT-friendly users. Don't migrate the executives first. Don't do that unless you want to lose your job if something goes wrong. Like, they always want me to migrate first. So don't tell them you're doing a pilot yet.
They don't know what pilot means.
Yeah. So when you're doing a pilot, you want to choose a few users that are friendly to IT, preferably from each one of different business divisions, because they might have different use cases, different applications they use, et cetera, and group these users together, bring them over, let them sit on a new environment for several business days, if not a week or two, to make sure things are working. There is some complexities there. If these users are using public folders, there's no public folder synchronization method out of the box, third-party tools. So if they're using public folders, you want to bring somebody from sales over as part of your pilot, but they use sales public folders, you can't bring them over because the public folders have to stay in a source environment until you bring all those users over and then their public folders with them. But again, try to skip the VIPs at least until your second pilot or a little further down. You want to make sure things are working and Outlook clients are updating. You've documented your policies and procedures on how you can tell users to update their mobile devices, or you've planned to have users come in the day of their migration. They have their mobile device, they have their home lap, they have their laptops, et cetera. So you migrate their mailboxes the night before, you have it suspended, and then you tell users, okay, at lunch, we're gonna have a brown bag lunch, we're gonna finish your migration over lunch. You should get the prompt in Outlook. Outlook gets prompted, it restarts, hopefully it updates fine. Then we're gonna update your mobile device, then you can go back to your desk around 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, we're providing lunch for you. So kind of, that's a good scenario. We're having somebody in IT there. You resume their mailbox move, say at 7 o'clock in the morning, people start coming around 8. You have somebody in IT in the sales division if you just migrated sales. That's there to update their mobile devices, fix Outlook profiles if Outlook doesn't update correctly. If they're using a Mac, update the Mac manually. If they're using some type of IMAP, SMTP client, update it manually. But you want to group users together, and then you have the whole public folder. So there is no iNet org REPL tool anymore. So the only method without third-party tools is to dump the public folders to PSTs. So who here has more than 10 gigs of public folders? 50? 100? Terabyte? Okay. Terabyte, okay. Do you know how many quantity-wise you have, roughly? Okay. So you have to wait a while before you can get a 2013 anyway, since you have that 10K limit. That will be addressed hopefully soon. 300,000, okay. I was talking to one guy yesterday. He's been a couple sessions. He was at, I think it was 2.5 or 3.5 million. So he has a ways to wait. If they don't bump it up to, say, 10 million or something, which I don't think they'll jump it up that high. When you're doing migrations, it's always good to clean up your data. Don't bring your garbage over. If you're a consultant like myself, though, I tell the customers to clean up their data, but you can't wait. You can't have the project on hold until they clean up the data. You can't ask users to clean up the data. They never will. It has to come down from the executives. It has to be preferably a cost associated with that data. So if sales does have public folders, we're going to charge sales $1,000 a gigabyte or something like that, some type of overhead costs, so it motivates them to clean up their public folders, their mailboxes. The smaller the mailboxes, the quicker things come over. Although, again, asking users to clean up their mailboxes doesn't really happen. But if you do have a lot of public folders, the only way to do it for free, quote, is to dump it to PSTs. You have PST size limits. You have the complexity of bringing those PSTs. Then you have the permissions. Did anybody get hit by that? Oh, go ahead. Even doing public folder migrations, intra-org is hard. Trying to get them from a 2003 to 2007, 2010, or whatever, that's hard. Permissions normally come over there, but cross-forest migrations, permissions are another hassle. Now, there are several tools. There's EX folders, there's PowerShell, where you can dump permissions to a file. As long as you're dragging and dropping the same folder structure over, you can then import those permissions back over fairly smoothly as long as those objects exist. But until that mailbox exists, it can't resolve the permissions to the mailbox. So you can't set permissions to sales until the sales users actually exist in the target environment. So you kind of have a chicken and egg scenario. Again, I normally do the mailboxes first and then pull into public folders related to those users quickly afterwards. And then I'll have a scheduled script because I know some permissions, because marketing's probably accessing the sales public folders, but marketing's being done 2 days later. So I'll have the set of permissions in a file and a script that runs like once a day, once an hour, that just re-imports them, re-imports them, re-imports them. The only problem is you have to remove the permissions first. So if people are changing permissions, you'll lose those changes. You can't, yeah, there's several complexity with public folders, period, and permissions on them.
I stayed up all day and night looking at that, making sure there wasn't any failures or issues. And at the end, Sunday night, I was able to do the public folder
migration. Cool. X-folders, yeah. Yeah, public folders, got to get rid of them. I mean, they work well for what they're for, and you can bring them over. They are supported, but they are a nightmare. Whether you're going Office 365, if you're using third-party tools, they make it easier. They can do syncing. But they still are very, very problematic. At least replication goes away in 2013. Well, except for the hierarchy. That messes up that. But okay, almost done with the email or the Exchange piece. So updating the clients, mentioned it several times. Devices and applications. Now, if they're still in SMTP sending, you don't really have to worry about updating them as long as mail.company.com stays valid. Keep that pointing to the old environment until, I normally do it until we have about half the users migrated, and then I'll change the SMTP domain names or relay names to point to the new environment. Same thing for inbound mail. Normally I'll keep inbound mail coming into the old environment until I have around 50% on the new environment, and then I'll change inbound mail to start going to the new environment. I just try to reduce the hops and complexities there. EWS clients. Some third-party tools use, a lot of third-party tools use EWS. They need to change their namespace they're using to point to the new environment once those mailboxes start coming over. Most MAPI clients, again, third-party tools that have email, or they pull stuff from email, like archiving tools, for example. Those need to be updated to point to the new environment. Third-party archiving tools it is. So at this point, we've migrated to mailboxes. We've exported and imported the contacts, groups, and OUs, so the Exchange environment's done. So now I can go into the NT piece. Who here is interested in going through the NT piece real quickly? We have about 8 minutes left. Okay, a few people. So any questions? If you have a question, just stand up at the mic.
I do have a question. I have a client that we'll be doing a cross-force migration for here in the next few weeks that is from a divestiture. And they've already set up their Active Directory that they're going to with active user accounts in it. So I can't run the prepare because the user objects already exist in a target domain.
You
but I still
can.
Need to mail enable them, right?
Yeah, you can. If there are several attributes that need to match, and the prepare move request will find them. The easiest thing to do is put the email address on them, the same account name. Oh, I can't remember. There's 3 out of 5 has to match. I don't remember the off the top of my head. But they do have active accounts. The problem is you can't have an enabled account in both forest. That's not a supported scenario. It'll work with Outlook, but it won't work with OWA. It won't work with EWS. It won't work with the Active Sync. So that is definitely a complexity that I've run into before where they want to start having some active accounts in the target forest, but their accounts are over here. Normally what ends up happening is the users have to have 2 accounts for a period of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. I'm back.
I kind of have a very similar situation, but except in the target domain, instead of just being accounts, they're mailboxes. So we provision using FIM. I was thinking maybe to convert the mailbox, because they're empty. They only exist so that the source people can actually log in and see our calendars on the central Exchange system. So could we just convert them to MEUs then? Like deprovision the mailbox, make them an MEU, and then run the move request without doing prepare at all?
I would suggest still using prepare. So if the mailboxes are truly empty, is mailbox so they can't go to us or forwarding out to an external one?
Yeah,
okay.
So
I'd get rid of the mailboxes and then use prepare move request. And then you can set up, if you have 2007 and higher in both environments, you can do the cross forest availability. So that'll be at least free busy information across the forest there. And use prepare move request to then repopulate the Exchange attributes in that target forest.
Right.
I've used Outlook to export public folders, and I found when I've imported it, it's too unreliable. Like, you can't actually see, when you drill down to the folders, it missed some folders, and it leaves them as empty. Is there any way to sort of mitigate that?
Microsoft has a script they provide, it's like get public folder aggregate or something another. What is it? Aggregate public folders, so that'll provide that. I also have scripts that will dump out the size of public folders by tree, dump it to an Excel spreadsheet, and then I do that in both environments and compare the numbers.
But when you see it in the PST, you can't tell that it hasn't done the folders, right? Only when you import it on the other side, so you have to do that script.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, in the PST, you can right-click on a folder and do properties, and it'll give you the same basic information that my script does.
Right, but some of these folders I've had, though, you have to drill down, like, probably about 34 levels, so you can go through all the levels and see, right, it's missing that folder there.
Yeah, so what I did in my script, I had to roll up the numbers of what's underneath it. So you don't, total up manually. So the root will tell you how many items you have total. And I go by item count and size, and the size isn't that accurate because they're a little different on size, but the item count should be matching the same.
It wasn't the permissions because I use X folders.
Let's table this so I can get this question in back there.
Auto discover, you talked about exporting from the target, putting it in the source. One of these mailbox moves could take some time. Have you seen a hijack where client is hijacked into the target, his Outlook profile moved to the target via auto discover even though the move isn't complete?
So auto-discover shouldn't make any updates until you tell it to complete the move request. I said earlier I'll do a suspend switch. So what that does, it populates a mailbox, say like 95% of the data or 99 up to that point, but it doesn't update the Active Directory. So auto-discover shouldn't pick up the change until you tell it to resume that move request. And then it'll sync up the final data. Then it'll update the Active Directory after replication finishes. And auto-discover runs again like every 15 minutes or if they restart Outlook. Then it should pick up the change. So it shouldn't have hijacked it when it's in the middle of moving until it's actually done moving.
And so the user experience is they're sitting at their desk and they're in Outlook and you move their mailbox and it completes while they're sitting there. They're going to get the bubble to...
Right, they'll get the pop-up. The administrator's made a change that requires a restart Outlook. So I'm going to run through the main migration stuff really quick, so I only have 2 minutes since there's no questions right now. So this is using ADMT. It's a free tool, actually written by Mission Critical Software. He used to be a product manager for back in the 90s. But we need to prepare the workstations, get the user accounts migrated over ADMT. Somebody asked about converting the mailboxes. So they were linked, as we saw a minute ago. In Exchange 2010 SP2, they added the ability to unlink it with a single commandlet, where it used to be a process. Then we can migrate the workstations. The servers and applications, what's going to delay your project? I can pretty much guarantee you that. ADMT is an old tool. It hasn't really been revved in a few years. So it uses SQL 2008 SP3, and I think it still does not support R2 or higher. For preparing workstations, the big gotcha, there are several gotchas here. Windows Firewall. If it's using RPC, it's not firewall friendly, you have to disable Windows Firewall and set up a bunch of exceptions. There has to be you have to be a local administrator from the target environment onto the source environment and vice versa. DHCP settings, WINS is still used. It doesn't work well or doesn't work at all without WINS. It's old technology. I've had to stand up a WINS server just to get ADMT to work reliably. These services have to be enabled. Once you have all that done, then it's really good to reboot the workstations because users' profiles get locked. ADMT will install an agent on that machine, go through and re-ACL the registry, the profile. A lot of times it fails, especially if the user's logged on. I've had it fail even after the user's logged off because the file's still locked. So I found it best just to reboot the workstation and then migrate it. So I talked about exporting all the accounts. When you migrate it over with the password export service, you can bring over your password. So where we left off in the migration, the accounts were disabled in the target environment. This will bring them over. We'll enable them. We'll refresh the group membership. Those groups that are not distribution or email enabled, ADMT can bring them over. We'll then, I normally leave the target account disabled until I'm ready to tell the users to log off and log back on, or mainly until their workstation is migrated. So I'll normally pre-migrate all the accounts, leave them disabled. I won't remove the link mailbox or attribute until I'm ready to migrate their workstations, and then I migrate their workstations, enable their accounts, and remove the link, clear out the linked account attribute on their mailbox. You also need to exclude these attributes. There is a VB script. I have a reference to it in my notes. If you don't exclude those attributes, it will break your mailboxes when you use ADMT to migrate those accounts. So the user will be working fine, migrate their account, all of a sudden their mailbox is broken. And you can fix it, but it requires a little brain surgery and ATSI edit. So linked mailboxes, this used to be a complex script where you had to disable the mailbox, dump their attributes, disable the mailbox, reattach a mailbox, re-import their attributes. So now that's just a one-line commandlet. Migrating to workstations, ADMT, the key thing is here, is changing the main membership. It resets permissions on their registry key, so when that user logs in with the new SID, they get their same profile they had before, you hope. It's a little problematic. It's probably like 10% failure rate. And that's pretty much about it, yeah. File and print, easy. Applications are the biggest delay, and we are there yet. So in summary, I didn't talk any about third-party tools. Free tools aren't free. It takes a lot of time and energy to get these things to work, a lot of testing. Even with third-party tools, you still won't get a full fidelity migration. Not everything can come over. Third-party tools cost more than just licenses alone. You may pay $12 a mailbox and think it does everything, but it still takes a lot of time, planning, and testing on your part. So if this, you know, whoever the company is sells you this thing as, you know, zero impact, there's no such thing as zero impact, especially in a cross-forest migration. You're going to have hiccups. You're going to have issues. I don't care what tool or third-party or your own tool you develop, you're going to have hiccups and surprises. That's why testing is so important, so you know about surprises ahead of time. And I think that is it. A couple of related sessions. They're already over, but you can view these online. So final thing, make sure you fill out your evaluation. I think that's the slide. There we go. Fill out your evaluations, and thank you for coming out to Mecca, everybody.